Welcome back to the RBR Recap, episode 30, a momentous episode. We're excited to be here today, Sunday, September 18th. Gabe, happy Hispanic Heritage Month. This was a good weekend to kick it off with a big fight. I'm Alex Burgos, of course, joined as always by my man, Gabe Rivas, an interested spectator, to say the least, after we had a lot of history with Triple G and Canelo individually. Obviously, just boxing fans, covering the fight, you working the fight, different fights in their trilogy. And so, first of all, I want to know, how are you, sir?
I'm doing well. The morning after a Saturday night of boxing is always relaxing, always good to take some time to review what happened.
Most definitely, yeah. And like I said, a good way to kick off Hispanic Heritage Month, we had Bam Rodriguez in the co-main and, you know, Canelo Alvarez versus Gennady Golovkin, the third and final fight. Now we can officially say that. 12-round super middleweight clash. I think what kind of got lost in the shuffle, and we didn't even really mention either, is, hey, Canelo has all the belts. You know, this was an undisputed fight. You know, Golovkin coming up from 160, obviously. He's a two-belt holder at 160. But, yeah, I think that kind of got lost in the shuffle. All the belts were on the line just because you thought the beef superseded everything. You know, that's what kind of took over the storylines. And people looking for like an exclamation point or, you know, a finale that was going to say, OK, we don't want to see this anymore. And yeah, depending on the side that you're on, maybe we got that.
And it was interesting because Triple G developed an entire campaign on becoming undisputed champ at 160 pounds. Obviously, it never happened because there were just so many politics in and around the middleweight rankings at that time. But Canelo, I think because of his star power and because he was just the biggest star in boxing in 2019, 2020, 2021, was able to move up to 168 and capture all the belts and finally make at least one of these trilogy fights, one of the fights of this trilogy, into an undisputed championship fight, though at 168 pounds.
Yeah, I agree. Like you said, it's kind of funny when you look at it because, yeah, his goal was to become undisputed at 160. And then now we got that at 168. But it was kind of a tale of two fights, depending on what you saw, because the Zone and their commentary, and I would say, generally speaking, most people on Twitter, which I was following along with, I didn't score the fight, but generally speaking, it seemed like people had this a one-sided victory for Canelo. And at least through the first half of the fight, where he looked fresh and in his zone, maybe 5-6 rounds to 0 for Canelo. But what the judges saw was something different. Went to 12-round unanimous decision victory for Canelo, and the scores were 116, 112, and 115, 113 twice, which, again, we were kind of talking off camera, thinking about, okay, just offhand, you know, without watching it again, without either of us officially trying to score it, what potentially could they have seen to give it that score? And maybe I'm thinking 8-4 Canelo at worst was my first feeling. But then when you start kind of going back, I know Mannix like gave him the first five. You could maybe pick one. And I know you mentioned the first, right? Was one of those.
Yeah, maybe one of the earlier rounds, maybe the first round where there wasn't that much action and Triple G was using his jab a lot and moving around. Some people might think that he would win the round because he's jabbing and moving around. And that's part of the ring generalship and defensiveness that people like. Again, I don't think that Triple G won many rounds. I think, like you said, at worst an 8-4, but if you're trying to be generous to the judges in terms of what kind of interpretation they had, you can see, all right, maybe one of the earlier rounds you can give to Triple G because of the jab.
Exactly. And then when you look at towards the end of the fight, I think it's been the pattern as of late. And I think now you're kind of getting a game plan for Canelo as well. I mean, he seems to, if I don't know why, but he started the fight similar to the way that he did the Bivol fight, where he's like winging, jumping in with hooks and really like overexerting himself to try and get a knockout. This was not Avni Yildirim. This is not, you know, one of those, I don't know exactly why he was doing that. And it seems always like he gets in his bag, maybe 4, 5, 6. He's feeling good. He's moving around. He's looking really good. But if the guy can kind of sustain that and really push things towards the later rounds, it seems like he fades. And so when you start to think about other potential matchups, we'll talk about that, but that's kind of like an interesting caveat. And, you know, when you're starting to game plan for a guy like Canelo, it's like maybe extend him to the later rounds and, you know, make him exert himself, make him work. And that's one of the things we were texting throughout the fight that I thought, yeah, Golovkin is jabbing, but he needs to, you know, and that was one of the keys that we mentioned, but power jab, push him back. And then, you know, make him try and miss as he's trying to counter him. But I think he did things well, Triple G, in spots, but definitely not enough. And no question that he lost the fight. But, you know, looking at the punch stats too, and kind of to what you were mentioning, if you're giving him maybe one or two early rounds, he jabbed or outlanded Canelo in jabs 74-350. Alvarez was 45-270. That was Golovkin's bread and butter. Again, he didn't go to the body much. He landed 8 punches to the body. And even the commentators were mentioning, like, I wonder why he's not, you know, throwing to the body. And I think it was Sergio Moro who mentioned, like, he doesn't want that uppercut in return. So that's kind of like what he's being cautious of. And Canelo also didn't really go to the body as much as we thought, too. So, I mean, when you're looking at Golovkin's offense, he really relied a lot on the jab. So maybe the refs are saying, okay, that's not a regular jab. That's a power punch. And that was maybe able to dictate some of those rounds.
Yeah, and clearly what needs to be stated is that, and everyone mentioned this on Twitter, is that this isn't the same Triple G that we saw 10 years ago. This right. isn't even the same Triple G that we saw 4 or 5 years ago in the first fight with Canelo. And it expressed itself and it demonstrated itself in the way he was very tentative throughout the fight. In the first fight, he was pushing the action, moving forward. In the second fight, Canelo was pushing the action, but at least you had Triple G being aggressive in some spots and throwing more punches. And this one, it was just Triple G throwing a lot of jabs, being very careful. And then also, rather than staying there and holding his ground, he was moving a lot more to his right. I think one of the commentators mentioned it, that when you're a veteran, one of the strategies that you can pursue is that, all right, you know what? I'm going to keep my distance. I'm going to throw this jab and I'm going to keep it cool. I'm not going to throw any hard shots. I'm going to see what this guy has. And then maybe in the later rounds, I'll know how much left I have in the tank. And then I can put the pedal to the metal and really push the action. Maybe that's what he hoped would have happened, because he was able to push the action, come forward a little bit. Perhaps some of that was a little bit of the fact that he knew that the rounds were, you know, that he was losing a lot of the rounds and he had to push the action in order to win some of that. So I don't know how much of that was strategy, and some of that was actually, you know, just saying, hey, I need to throw caution to the wind and win some rounds. But I think it was a veteran move, and it demonstrated that he is 40 years old and that he's going to have to rely on using his jab and moving around a lot.
Yeah, I agree with that. But then, like, looking at certain details, you start to think, how much credit can we give him for the way that he fought? Because you had Jonathan Banks in the middle saying, you know, believe in yourself, have confidence, do the things that we worked on. So it's almost like, because by the middle of the fight, you start to think, okay, Canelo looks like, okay, now he's backing up a little bit more. He's taking spots, breaks on the ropes. His output is not as high. And then you thought, okay, Triple G may have saved some in the tank and then come back. Was Triple G doing that himself? It's like, was he his own trainer? Because it seemed like Banks was like, this is not what we planned for. But at the same time, I thought, like, okay, Golovkin is in there. He's feeling and trying to sense, what is the best way for me to win this fight? And it's maybe getting to the later rounds and then, you know, unleashing whatever I have left in 9, 10, 11, 12. It wasn't a bad strategy, but again, age, you could tell that he didn't have enough. And man, it was crazy. I almost felt like deja vu, but in reverse. I felt like it was the first fight, you know, for as much as they criticized Canelo for running, I'm like, this feels like the first fight, and Triple G is Canelo. It was just weird. And I would say through 6, I was like, man, what a way to go out for a guy that was so destructive in his prime, so feared, come forward. You know, he would bait guys to hit him. You know, a lot of what they were talking about that Canelo they thought was doing and playing possum and this and that, he's taking a page out of Triple G's book. That was Triple G. Remember the Willie Monroe fight and things like that. I mean, he would sit there, let people hit him so that he could get his own off. For a guy like that, I thought he recuperated better, and then in the later rounds showed a better version of himself, so that we're not like, man, that was not Triple G, or how far, you know, have we come where he just was not even a shell of himself. Definitely slowed down, but I will say I do like that. At least he came back, pressed the action as much as he could, and just gave it a little bit of what, you know, he thought might win the fight.
I see what you mean. And perhaps it wasn't a plan that they had before for him to box and move around and tire him out in the later rounds. It was a sense of panic. And the fact that he, feeling a lot older, not as confident, said, you know what, we have a plan, but I'm just going to throw a bunch of jabs and try to survive and see what happens. And then that sense of panic came in and he started to throw more in the later rounds. I see what you mean. And perhaps more bloodthirsty fans would say, well, you're saying, hey, you were such a monster in your prime. We want to see you go out on your shield.
On now, your shield. And they mentioned that a few times, but it's like, you know, who's dumb enough to just go in there and start, I'm going out on my shield.
it's easy for you to say that when you're a fan and you're not in the ring taking the punishment, when you're Triple G and you're 40 years old and you still want to have a few more fights and you still have two belts at 160 pounds.
He mentioned that. He was quick to mention that.
He's still a champion. Why would you go out on your shield? You know, get your payday. Don't take as less damage as possible and live to fight another day. On the other side, though, one thing that we didn't know going into the fight is that Canelo had a hand injury. And in his words, he couldn't even hold a glass of water or a glass, right? And so that makes you think, if he didn't have this injury, would he have been able to knock him out? How much credit can we give to Triple G for his shotgun jab and his ability to move around to his right? Because that's the strategy he had against Lemieux. Lemieux was not Canelo. So if Canelo wasn't injured, would he have been able to cut the distance more, counter more? I believe it was his right hand that was injured, right? So was he not able to land those counter rights that he does on other people that hurts him and sets up more body shots, sets up more offensive opportunities? So I guess we'll never know. But one thing that Eddie Reynoso said in his corner was that don't let him grow, you know, don't let him grow and get into this fight, because and this is what I think he's thinking. He's 40 years old. He's an older man. You can't let him get back into this fight. But also in the back of their minds, they got to be thinking, what's the criticism going to be? That I can't knock out a 40-year-old Triple G? You know what I mean? You can't let a guy like that get back into the fight. You have to dominate him and make it look worse as the rounds progress.
Yeah, I thought that was telling that Eddie Reynoso was saying that. It's like, you're the younger guy, like reminding him, like, don't get tired. And for anyone that's saying, you know, Canelo didn't get tired. No, he was tired. His corner was telling him, like, amping him up. Come on, you got to be the younger guy. You got to put the pressure on. Don't let him grow. Don't let him get back in the fight. So I thought that was telling as well. And I mean, Canelo obviously, I think some of those issues seem to have gone away after the Trout fight. Like you were saying, he seemed to get better with stamina, but now it seems like little by little, those things may be creeping in again. And stamina, I'm telling you, if I was game planning for Canelo, it would be control the action, stay out of harm's way, you know, and get this fight into the second half. And then let's see what happens there. It's not really, you know, a big thing when you're trying to win the fight on scorecard, but if you feel like you have enough to, you know, push the action and really hurt him, especially if he's fighting at 175, you know, whatever the case is, you got bigger guys. I mean, they can impose their will. I mean, you figure if that's better Biev, or if that's, you know, or even Bivol again.
Or even Benavidez at 168.
Even Benavidez. Yeah, exactly. So I think there's something there. So let's move on though, in terms of, you know, the fight. Obviously Canelo got the victory. Now moving forward, what potentially could be next, not only for him but for Triple G, because like we've mentioned, he's champion, two belt champion at 160, so a lot of options. I think he mentioned, you know, a homecoming fight is probably in his future, and you know, after the fight he's, I have plans. So we can only hope that those plans include Jermall Charlo, Jaime Munguia, you know, some of these guys. So I'll kick it to you first about Canelo. What do you think? Obviously, he's going to now have to rest. He's going to have to get surgery on his hand, like you mentioned. But there's a big fight between Bivol and Zurdo Ramirez, which I'm salivating. I can't wait for that fight because that is a true light heavyweight fight. You know, we're not talking about a smaller guy moving up. So that's going to be an exciting fight. So it depends what happens there. And he said he does want some get back. He does want to try that fight. Now, I think that's a bad idea. But what do you think potentially could be next for him? And I'll throw that added caveat, because they asked him again, you know, about fighting Mexicans, and you know, he keeps on repeating, I guess he's considering David Benavidez being Mexican. I mean, he's half Ecuadorian, half Mexican. He's born in the U.S., but I guess he considers David Mexican, to kind of put him on that list, like, hey, I don't want to fight him. But then in the same breath, he says, I'll fight anybody, and I always have. So not quite sure what that means, but what are your thoughts on what's next?
Well, you know, first of all, to close the book on this trilogy, I'm happy that the trilogy's over. I wasn't really clamoring for that third fight. I was happy with the first two, especially because Triple G was going up in age, but now the fight's over. It's an interesting chapter, like you mentioned, in both of our lives as reporters, me as a publicist, that we can put behind us. Nice little moment in history, but I am happy it's over. I think we all need to move on. And yeah. I think that rivalry, I think it ended back in 2018. I think that's the best we would have seen at a Triple G. And it demonstrated itself in the performance that we saw from him. But moving forward with Canelo, he has an injury in his hand. He needs to rest. After a September fight, it doesn't seem like he'll like want to return until May of the following year. But with that hand injury, we don't know how long he's going to be outside of the ring. So that's one thing to consider when looking at his potential opponents. And then it also depends. Is he going to stay at 168 for his next fight, or does he want up to move 175? At 168, I think the most intriguing fight is a fight against David Benavidez. He's young, he's hungry, he's tall, he throws a lot of punches. He has a lot of the qualities that could give trouble to Canelo Alvarez. What does that mean? What do I mean by that? He's tall. And so Canelo's going to have a little bit of trouble of cutting the distance, but David Benavidez doesn't mind fighting on the inside. So maybe he might not have trouble at all finding him. But even if he is on the inside, David is really good at throwing lots of punches, lots of short punches, and that could be very difficult from someone taller. Another thing is that because of he's younger, he has a lot more gas in his tank. And so he could, as we mentioned earlier in this podcast, he can pursue a strategy of, you know what, I'm taller, I'm quicker, I'm younger. Let me play it smart in these earlier rounds, but round 7, 8, 9, 10, I'm really going to push to action and see how much gas Canelo has in the tank and throw everything. Those 12.
Throw one of those Porky Medina combos. Punches,
exactly. And not just one time. I'm going to do it a few times in rounds 8, 9, 10, 11 and see what he has. Because in the Bebo fight, had he been a little bit more of an active puncher, he could have caused a lot of trouble to Canelo because he was on the ropes and he was just saying, hey, come give me more. But if he was a more active puncher throwing many more punches per round, who knows? Maybe he could have hurt Canelo or you know, who knows? It's very difficult to hurt him because he has a granite chin, right? But the most intriguing fight is David Benavidez. But to look at it from the other angle, a reporter did ask him in the post-fight press conference, hey, you said you weren't going to fight Mexicans. Does that mean you won't fight David Benavidez? And it looked like Canelo got visibly upset. He's like, look, don't disrespect me. And I know I said that after the last, I forgot if it was after the Chavez fight or whatever, that he wouldn't fight Mexicans, but also he'll say he'll fight anyone. So I think that the possibility is definitely open for him fighting David Benavidez. To your point earlier, in the same sentence, he'll say, I won't fight Mexicans, but he'll also say, I'll fight anybody.
So, right. And so, actually I'll add real quick, that a caveat is Jose Benavidez Sr. He's like, his dad is talking a lot of shit. So I would say to Sr., keep doing that because that seems to motivate Canelo.
He didn't want to fight Triple G, and all the shit talking got him to do it again. Right. I mean, money helps too, right? But I think if you can get into his head and you know, if you can get him to have a little chip on his shoulder, I think he'll accept the fight. So I think that it's a fight that could happen. We've already seen him take a fight on PBC like he did with Caleb Plant. So I think the most interesting fight that we could see him is against David Benavidez, although there are other fighters at 168. Now, if he wants to take a chance and fight the winner of Zurdo versus Bivol, I mean, go for it. I mean, it's very difficult to go back up to 175 against Bivol. I mean, I don't know if Canelo has what it takes to beat a guy who is that much bigger than him. However, he did say that there were some issues in camp. Now, if he has resolved those issues, if his hand is good, because he did also say that the hand had been bothering him since the Caleb Plant fight. Mm. So if he can resolve all those issues and come in well, then fighting the winner of Zurdo versus Bivol might be an interesting matchup, although it's very risky. But we also have to see who's going to win that fight.
Right.
Zurdo looked huge next to Bivol. You know what I mean? Who knows who's going to win that fight? But if Canelo wants to move up to 175 and take that challenge, I mean, let's do it. But it's going to be a big risk.
Yeah, let's make sure Zurdo makes weight. That boy thick.
Yeah, no, he's big.
He was a cruiserweight, heavyweight in his last fight, you know, walking into the ring. He was huge. I think he was past 201, so he's like 205 to something like that. But yeah, I agree with you. David Benavidez is the fight I want to see. If we, you know, had our choice. And again, legacy wise, got to give Canelo credit if he wants to go back up and fight Bivol, or if it's Zurdo, if he wins. But I don't see him again having success, kind of like you're saying, especially not only because of the injury and whatnot, but the style of fought that he, you know, the fight that he fought against Bivol the first time. Now, if he learns and he does something different, maybe. But again, he's a very rhythmic fighter, spurts fighter. And if your spurt is just going to be power punches and not really doing damage to Bivol, where you're not going to be able to wear someone like him down. He's just too big. You know, obviously Bivol was like, I couldn't raise my hand after the fight, you know, over my head, but you know, you couldn't have told me that during the fight. He didn't look like he was visibly hurt. He was still, you know, enacting his game plan and doing well and taking it around. So, I mean, if that's the most that you can do, just beating on his arms, that's not going to win you the fight. So if he can employ a different game plan, maybe, perhaps, and that, again, that's a legacy fight. But I think the downfall of that is much more, because you're moving back up in weight, more wear and tear on your body. I would like to see him staying in around 168 and potentially fight a David Benavidez. So we'll see what happens, or maybe a Charlo moves up, you know what I mean? Or if Munguia can get a big victory and then parlay that into a super fight versus Canelo. Again, I'm mentioning multiple Mexicans here. Zurdo, Jaime Munguia, you know, Benavidez, if you want to throw him into that conversation too. So we kind of get past that point. But like I mentioned as well, Benavidez Sr., keep talking that shit, because it seems to get under Canelo's skin in a way. And at least to get him up to get that challenge. And, you know, because he's like, otherwise, he's like, well, what has he done? Is his excuse or his reason for just kind of disregarding that fight. But at the end of the day, you know, when it's convenient, fighters say it's what the fans want. You know, the fans wanted this. Well, the fans really want to see that one. So moving towards, you know, what's next for Triple G? Obviously, we mentioned that he's a champion at 160. What are your thoughts on what's next for him? Obviously, there's a lot of names that he could potentially fight if we're staying, you know, within United States matchroom. Now, I don't think you get like a Munguia or Charlo, obviously, if you're going to do a homecoming fight or whatever in Kazakhstan. So maybe that's a one-off and then he comes back and does one or two fights, but potentially make a run at undisputed at 160. What are your thoughts?
At 40 years old, Triple G is in the twilight of his career. So he's going to have to figure out how he wants to spend these last couple of fights if he does continue to fight. He says, I'm still a champion. And indeed, he has two belts at 160 pounds. He's going to come back. Maybe he fights in Kazakhstan, as you mentioned. But against what kind of opposition? If it's a homecoming fight in Kazakhstan, if it's things like that, then if it's showcase fights, then it's not going to be guys in the top 10, or at least the guys in the top 10 that we want to see him with. Who do I mean? Who are in the top 10 that we want to see him with? Jermall Charlo, Jaime Munguia, even Chris Eubank Jr., who was calling him out on Twitter. You know, these guys weren't clamoring to fight him 7 years ago, but right now is the time to fight him. And hey, if I'm Jaime Munguia's promoter, I'm Jermall Charlo's promoter, I'm saying, give me that fight right now, because this is the one that's going to push my fighter to stardom. And then another guy at 160 pounds is Zanebek Alimkanuli. Zanebek, I think he is going to be the top fighter at 160 pounds very soon. Once, you know, Triple G's out, maybe Jermall moves up, and Jaime, I mean, we don't even know if he's going to stay at 160, because his last fight was at 164. But Zanebek, if I'm going to bet my money on who's going to be the next at 160, it's that Kazakh fighter. You know what I mean? But with Triple G, I don't know. Perhaps a homecoming fight against a guy like maybe Carlos Adames or someone like that, for him to not have to go out on a shield in the last few fights, for him to go out as a champion and retain his titles in that fashion, rather than what we usually see, and that's seeing an old champion go out violently and lose his belts and you know, be pushed out of the sport instead of out of his own volition coming out of the sport, like with Andre Ward. If you want to take more of an Andre Ward route, I know he already lost to Canelo, but in perhaps losing with a victory, I mean, I'm all for that. I think Triple G has given us a lot of great fights over the years, but it's up to him to see how he feels.
Imagine if he could get that WBC title. Imagine he fights Charlo and wins. What about an all Kazakh war for all the belts? Because Danibek, as we know, has now been bumped up to the WBO champion. You know, that would be all the belts right there.
Yeah.
One last homecoming. I mean, maybe a homecoming all out, you know, Kazakh fight. Wow.
Yeah. Well, I hope they get the guy who sung the national anthem for Kazakhstan to come back all Kazakh, right?
That dude. Yeah. I want him at my birthday party. Yeah. I'm like, you can sing whatever you want, man. He was a showman, for sure.
Of course. But in all honesty, right now in his career, at this stage in his career, do you think that he can beat a Jermall Charlo? I think that a few years ago, Triple G, I don't say he walks through him. I say that he does. It's a really good fight and he beats him. But right now, Jermall, I mean, he's just younger. He's stronger. He looks really good. And Triple G, it's not the same guy. We need to see Triple G wanting to take risks. That's the way he wins fights, by taking risks and hurting people. And he doesn't seem like he's willing to do that anymore.
At least in this fight. I mean, I thought that he was, you know, more willing to take risks against Murata, and Murata seemed to hurt him more. You know, those shots to the body doubled him over. And, you know, it looked like, you know, we may not get a third Canelo fight, you know, at a certain point in that Murata fight. Now, does he fight the same way he did against Canelo, against Charlo? And the other thing I wanted to mention too, you know, for as much as, you know, we're saying Triple G didn't do much, Canelo didn't do as much as you may have thought too. Now, is it the hand? Is it something else? Or is it the fact that Triple G still keeping guys honest? I mean, that jab is a powerful punch, or those, you know, hooks. I think Canelo's side of his face, you know, where Golovkin landed some of those left hooks, those punches are still hard. You know, power is, like they mentioned, it's an age-old adage. The last thing to go. Yeah, so, I mean, you know, let's not discount Golovkin's power and strength and whatnot. Now, I would favor Charlo at this point. I'm with you. And that's why I said, imagine if he were able to win that fight or get past that fight. And then, you know, you don't go right into the, you know, a fight against Janibek too. I mean, that guy is a young killer too. So I'm just saying, throwing it out there, could potentially be. But if I'm, you know, maybe Triple G, Tom Loeffler, maybe a homecoming and maybe a Munguia fight or something to just kind of get paid and ride off into
the sunset. Because with Munguia, I think with regard to technique, I think Triple G is still a much more technical fighter. Yeah. A lot of people don't give him credit for how much technique he has, but he was a silver medalist as a 2004 Olympics, 300 amateur fights. I think it was Abel Sanchez who molded him into more of a Mexican style fighter in order for him to take more risks. But had it not been for that, we probably would have seen more of what we saw last night, him being more of a boxer, more of the Eastern European style, using his left hand, stepping to the right. And so, and a lot of subtle defense, even when he was coming forward, he would roll with his punches. He would duck, he would slip, he would parry as he would throw his jab. So a lot of underrated defense. But what I'm saying is, technique-wise, I think he's still a lot better than Jaime Munguia, but it's Jaime Munguia's youth. It's his ability to throw more punches that might make the difference in a potential fight, and in a potential fight against any young fighter.
Right, because we know Munguia is going to give you opportunities to get your shots off, but it seemed like Golovkin was a little trigger shy. So, you know, if you see those openings, are you able at 40, 41 to get your shots off and really take advantage of those things? Or is Munguia able to get out of trouble, like you said, because of his offensive activity and because of his youth and quickness at this point in time? But again, one I would sign up for. I wouldn't mind seeing any of those fights that you mentioned. And, you know, we're not mentioning Demetrius Andrade because he's moved up. But, you know, I mean, he's kind of always the one guy hanging out in the background. I mean, I'm sure, you know, he would love a Triple G fight at 168. But that is not a fight that I see Triple G taking in his career.
Thank you for listening to the RBR Recap. Make sure to follow us on social media at RBR Recap and visit RBRRecap.com for the latest episodes.